My family decided to leave beautiful West Pennant Hills, number one New Line Road we were living in, and we moved to Indonesia. We went to Indonesia to live long term, possibly for a decade or more. And at that time, I took a two-year-old and a three-year-old to live in Indonesia. My husband had a visa to as an aid worker, and he was teaching in a Bible school. And my visa said, following husband. Which meant that I had to be careful. I didn't do any work that took away paid employment from a national person, but I had to be creative in what I would do. I said I had a 2- and a 3-year-old, and as soon as I got there, I fell pregnant with number three. But don't feel sorry for me. I had a maid who cooked. Our third baby, I don't know if I honestly changed a nappy for the third child. So the maid would say, dinner is on the table, and she would take the baby from me while we ate, very civilized. And then when we arrived in Australia, came back 2 years later, 3 years later, when my baby was two, all he wanted was rice and chili sauce. And I had no idea how to feed this child who had always eaten in the kitchen with the maids. So what was I going to do? Within a few months of arriving in Indonesia, I saw it. I saw exactly what I wanted to do, what my heart delighted in. And I saw this amazing young American girl. She was probably my age then, mid to late 20s. And she was working in a village, teaching village women how to make beautiful patchwork quilts. She would get the fabric from America, so it was beautiful fabric. These women would make patchwork quilts, and then the quilts were sold, and often us expatriates desperately wanted to buy them before they even got sent overseas for sale. And the proceeds from these quilts, first of all, it put electricity into that village where the women were, and then it brought running water. How amazing is that? And as well as that, the amazing woman who started the program would teach the women about the love of Jesus. That was it. That was so what I wanted to do, something like that project. The first year in Indonesia, we went to language school. So that was every day studying the language, which was exhausting. And then in the afternoon, we would drag the children around the village and we would practice our dialogues that we had learned at language school. After a year of language in a lovely big city, we moved to an outer island. It was called Sulawesi, the island. And it was nothing like Julia Roberts' Eat, Pray, Love films of Bali. Nothing like that. It was a very polluted city. What was lovely was that the sun would set over the ocean. And those of us who live in Sydney enjoy seeing the sun set over the ocean. And if you looked out to the sun, it was very beautiful. But if you drew your eyes down closer to the water level, you just saw layers and layers of rubbish floating in the water. It was a very polluted city. It was very overcrowded. There were whole slum areas out near the airport that were just, as you would imagine, slum areas to be. Tourists did not come to the part of Indonesia where we lived. It was a hot, dirty, crowded city. And it was fiercely Islamic, so it was very noisy, especially when all the mosques got going. And sometimes I would wonder why had we left beautiful Sydney with its lovely parks and its wide roads and footpaths, which nobody uses. And in Indonesia, there are where we were, no footpaths, everyone crowding on the side of the road along with the rubbish and the cars weaving through and the trishaws and the motorbikes and all the building materials piled up in piles. How could I be a blessing? I so wanted to do a project like that American girl was doing. My husband was lecturing. I was very proud of him. He lectured in the national language for 2 hours. He could give a lecture, and he made sure that he went right to the bell so that no one asked a question, because then he thought he may not understand the question or be able to give the answer. But if he stuck to his prepared notes, he was fine. And I set up the home, and I learn how to talk with the maids, or they learn how to understand my broken language, and how the shopping happened daily at the wet market. Very few supermarket and not prepared foods. And I was going to say caring for this baby, but I guess I was supervising the care of this baby. So in the back of my mind, my heart still wanted to do something useful, a project that could be a blessing to village women and poor women. But I had no business training. A bit clueless in that area. And I didn't really have a skill, a cottage craft skill. And I certainly wasn't able to do a massive quilting project with beautiful fabrics from America. So I continued to look around our city and beyond to see how I could start something. And to cut a long story short, it took about 8 years before I got a project underway. In the meantime, I busied myself teaching at the international school, making sure that the children, for a while I did some homeschooling. I would travel out to villages where my husband's students were from. And one day, one of my husband's students talked about in his village, he had a base camp where village women would come in and how he wanted a project that the women could do. So an amazing opportunity to start a project. So I thought, I am not very talented to do a quilt project, so why don't I start small with something I know? Something very small, something so simple, and I began to teach the women cross stitch. That was something small and achievable. And within 12 months, we were able to get a group of women in one village and then a second village, and then a third village, making very simple Christmas cards. I said to these women, if you make cards like this, I think I can take them back and sell them in Australia. And so they began making cards. Christmas cards seemed the easiest thing for me to think of that would sell, because I know that some of us buy 20 or 30 or 40 or 100. Not everyone does that. Asians, where we were quite unfamiliar to the concept of sending a Christmas card. But certainly I knew that my friends back in West Pennant Hills would buy these cards. And so the project grew, and it was exciting to see how this could be a blessing to the women. This is the first card that we made. A very simple card that said peace. Has very few stitches in it and very few colours, but the women were getting the concept. Now, there were a few problems initially in getting this project started. The women would take the cloth home and the cloth would get a little bit dirty because some of them only had dirt floors in their home. So we had to teach them how to keep the cloth in a clean plastic bag and to wash their hands before they worked on it. Another problem was that the women often just had one globe that hung from the middle of the room, electric light, very weak light. And I was concerned that if they sewed at night, it could be bad for their eyes. So I tried to encourage them to just sew in the sunlight in the daytime. But the women were very excited because these women, when they finished the little sewing, they could bring it back and receive some income for the sewing. And this is the first time that these women had ever received their own money. It was very exciting for them. You know, I know you know that we live in a very lucky country. You know, occasionally Melbourne and sometimes Sydney get rated as the most livable city in the world or the second most livable city in the world. Often Vancouver competes up there. And we really do live in an amazing city. And the contrast is with the poor. The poor, these women that I was working with, our world seems to be confused. These poor women would have to pay for basic primary school education for their children. And we get it free. How does that work? We are wealthy in one of the most beautiful places in the world with free education for our children, and the poor have to pay. Also, think of our medical system. With our Medicare card, we can go to a doctor. But these poor women have to pay. And the same with basic medications. So these women were very thrilled to earn small amounts of money for their sewing so that they could take their child to the doctor and buy medicines and not have to ask their husband, who was a farmer, can I have some money to buy the medication? These poor women daily often sit out with a child who is unwell, hoping and watching as the sickness progresses, hoping that the child will improve before they need to spend the money on the medication. So imagine how thrilled they were to be able to go and buy the medicine of money that they had earned themselves. Last night, I dropped my husband to the airport, and he's now in Africa, visiting workers, people from Sydney who are in villages all over Africa. And they've, in the last few days, have been sending me shopping lists of things they want my husband to take over for them. And not only is it things like lollies and cheese, Tim Tams, but they ask for the Panadol. And the Panadol, the Ibuprofen, for things for the children under 5 months, for the children under five, for these basic medications, because they can't buy them there, or they can't trust what they buy there. How fortunate are we to have medications so available in our supermarket that are affordable and make a huge difference to our children's lives? You know, we can just take a little bit of time and shop smartly. We can sometimes purchase things where the purchase of that item can be a blessing to other people. And that's an example of why we have this fair trade market set up today. Just as Priscilla said, the proceeds from that scarf will make a difference to a woman's life in another part of the world. Have you heard of fair trade? I'm sure you have if you live here. And I was very thrilled to find this in the kitchen just now. This poster in the kitchen here at this church saying, drink justly, love mercy, fair trade. Fair trade guarantees a better deal for third world producers. And at St Mark's here, we serve fair trade tea and coffee. Do you know you can make a decision at your home to only drink fair trade tea and coffee? Because it is now available in our supermarkets. Australia has been very disappointing, very slow to get onto this fair trade concept. The UK and Europe got onto it decades ago. And today, if you were to go into a supermarket in the UK, there could be a whole aisle full of produce, chocolates and all sorts of things that are fair trade items. But still, maybe just 4 or 5 years ago, I was encouraging people when you went to your local IGA and when you went to Coles to ask the manager, where are the fair trade products? And they are slowly coming onto the shelf. This is one symbol to look for. It's on a lot of teas, a lot of coffees, a lot of Cadbury's chocolates. What do you think that picture is? A lot of people are confused by that symbol. Well done. Do you know, a lot of people say it looks like a bird, like a toucan, with a beak and its eye. But actually, it is a lovely picture of a black man punching the air going, woohoo! If you buy this product, I get a fair, decent salary for my labour. I am not exploited by a big company. The people who are managing where they are making sure that these people are paid correctly. So can you see the head is the black ball? And then the arm raised up. Well done, Priscilla. A lot of people can't see it until you explain it to them. That's the fair trade symbol. There are other symbols. Sadly, in Australia, sometimes we will, as a nation, be more attracted to caring for the environment than for the poor. It's important to care for the environment, but we really want people to be well paid. That this man, if he works in the fields picking coffee, that he can afford to send his children to the public school that he has to pay for, and to take them to the doctor that he has to pay for, and to buy medicines that he has to pay for. So he needs to be paid a fair, decent salary. So I think McDonald's has adopted the alliance. It's a little frog. So that cares for the environment, and it does care for the workers a little bit. So that's a good symbol to also look for. So this isn't the only symbol, but I would love to challenge you to become a smarter shopper when you go to the supermarket, to have a look if there's a symbol and to see that it's helping somebody. Well done, St. Mark's. I want you to have a look now at this little video, which goes for 3 minutes. That could be a little clip you'd like to show your children. There's also children's versions of that. It's called The Miniature Earth, so you can Google that, The Miniature Earth. So what it's saying is, if we grabbed 100 people and brought them here and pretended, made an example that they represented the whole earth, how would it look? And so I think those statistics are quite shocking. So it said that if you have the internet, anyone here not have the internet? Well, that means that we're in the top 8% of these 100 people in the world. And if we have a bed and a fridge and a cupboard, live in a house, we're in the top 75% of the world. We live in an incredibly privileged quality of life. And I know here in Pennant Hills we think, how can we help those other 75% who don't have the basics, who live on less than a dollar a day? How can we make a difference? And so fair trade is one example. And I'd love you to be creative and think of other ways that you could help. Example could be sponsor a child through Compassion or World Vision. They do amazing work and they make a whole huge difference. They pay for schooling and uniforms and they change a child's life. So these are things that we could be doing in our comfort as we sit here in this beautiful country. We will drive. Very few of us will use the beautiful footpaths that we have, and we can actually make a difference if we consciously try and think of ways. I know it is so easy to just live life here and forget about how other people around the world, the majority, are struggling. So just to finish with my card project, we started with cross stitch. And it was slow, and the women were making piece cloths, and we would pay them up front. And then we had a little cash flow problem because it was a long time till Christmas, but we wanted to pay them as they worked. And so Christmas cards only sell one time a year, so we tried to find another way to keep the flow happening. And so we started doing just local cloth cards. So in Indonesia, the women wear sarongs, and in every area, they wear a different type of sarong. Some of them, like this, could be hand-woven silk, which might take 3 months for a lady to weave on a loom. Or it could be a lovely florally batik. And so I would go to the market and cut these up and get the women to glue them in the windows. So that helped with cash flow, and we made them that they were blank and non-Christmas. And then after a while, the women became more and more skilled at cross-stitch, and we've been able to move from a design like this to something quite complicated. So now they can do quite a complicated work, and we still sell it very cheaply. So this nativity scene is a $5 card. And the majority of the money often goes in the postage and the packaging to get it to Australia, sadly. And then in time, we thought, how's another way that we could make these cards more interesting? And lovely people in West Pennant Hills were buying these cards, and I knew as the years ticked by, they were getting a little bit bored of the same designs. And so we came up with an idea of the women to cut out a shape. Now, these women are very skilled with a razor blade. They cut the rice in the rice fields. So they have a little razor blade in a bamboo case, and they can cut the rice. And so with that same razor blade, we were able to get them to cut out simple shapes, and then we would put the batik behind. And then as they've continued on, they've got a little bit more skilled, and they can do more decorative. But sadly, cards are not as popular as they used to be. I think every year people are sending less Christmas cards than the year before. And even on the radio station the other day, I heard this woman say, look, I got married 3 years ago and I still haven't sent out all the thank yous for my wedding. And she said, I've got the cards. I might get around to it. And I know with my daughter, I'm trying to encourage her, don't forget to send thank you cards. But the younger generation are using cards less and less. And I heard on the radio that the thank you card is one of the cards that's most slipping out of circulation. So it's a bit of a reflection of our society that we are thanking people less, that we're sending cards less. So the women say to me, Marcel, we want you to keep ordering more and more cards. And as the decade's gone on and my friends have been selling them and buying them for a long time, I'm continually thinking of new ways and new things that they can make and sell. It's very hard to think of things that someone in a third world can make locally, and we will purchase them on a regular ongoing. So if you have any ideas on that, we're always keen to know. All these women here who are selling items are also looking for things that we will want to buy that can be made by these women. So I leave you with the challenge to be creative in how we can be a blessing to the very poor people of the earth who are the majority. And we are the very, very fortunate minority living in this beautiful city. And if we can think of ways to be a blessing, I think that is truly a beautiful thing. Thank you.